Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Opal Environmental Justice Oregon has a new campaign to stop fare hikes and win expansion of fareless, decriminalized public transportation. This campaign no longer accepts that transportation must be a private, for-profit system that excludes and criminalizes our communities, chokes our airways and streets, and destabilizes our climate. It demands that mass transit must become a public service which excludes no person due to lack of payment, is controlled democratically by the people who rely upon it most, and serves everyone to the maximum extent possible. Today we talk with Orlando Lopez-Batista and Tristan Isaac, who are both community organizers with Opal Environmental Justice Oregon and Bus Riders United. Orlando and Tristan, welcome to Locus Focus.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Well, I wanted to start just by talking a little bit about Opal, which is an organization that's relatively new on the horizon here in the Portland area, and an organization that I have a feeling a lot of our listeners don't really know much about. So tell us who you are and very briefly, like, what your goals are.
Yeah, so our organization has been around for just a little over 10 years now, or going on actually a bit more longer than that. But our organization started out as an organization that was fighting for clean air. And so something that a lot of people don't know is that Portland has some of the worst air qualities. Because we live in Oregon, we have this perception that, you know, it's pretty clean, but that's not the case. We actually have very lax regulations compared to Washington and California. And so when, like, our organization started door knocking, canvassing folks about, like, our air quality, people were like, you know, that's all and great, you know, that sets us a very, like, important cause that you all are fighting for, but my concern is really, how am I going to get to work? You know, our bus service, like, especially in East Portland, is not that great. And so that's kind of like when we started to think, like, you know, we actually need to address something that community members are talking about right now, which is public transit. And so that's kind of how, like, we started getting involved in, like, our pretty much our public transit system, going to transit board meetings, trying to find, like, learn more about people's experiences and how they get around transit. And we realized that, like, you know, it's a very important system that a lot of people depend on as a lifeline. That's access to housing, jobs, education, opportunity, really.
Well, I want to get back to the air quality issues that you said that Opal really started around. Now, is it a lot of the air quality? It seems to me that a lot of the air quality issues in Portland are sort of determined by geography and class and income. That if you live, except for the West Hills, which has some of the worst air quality in the city and also some of the highest incomes, but throughout a lot of Southwest Portland and further Southeast Portland, their air quality, as far as I know, is not too bad. But specifically in corridors around the I-5 corridor, around the close to the port in North and Northeast Portland, is extremely bad. So I'm wondering, am I correct about this? Are all of us in Portland suffering, or is it actually more of a kind of a class and race issue?
It's a little bit of everything, you know. It's very briefly, pretty much, like, we've become like a dumping ground for a lot of, like, semi-trucks that aren't used in Washington, California, because our regulations do not prevent those trucks from, like, running in our communities. So we have trucks that are emitting a lot more, like, diesel pollution or air carbon toxins or other emissions, and they're running in our neighborhoods, you know. And so, like, we can't dismiss I-205 and then also Powell as corridors, as well as Division, 82nd Avenue. These are areas where you'll see a lot of these semi-trucks as well.
I guess I live in a kind of a little protected bubble there, far southeast Portland, far away from, I mean, we can hear the freeway, we can't really see it. And I think that there's something about a lot of attitudes that Portlanders have that they do think that we live in Oregon, it's the cleanest state in the country, and they don't know that we actually we have some great environmental laws and some total absence of some very critical environmental laws that both California and Washington have. But how do we make people a little bit more conscious, not only of the air that they're breathing, but of the air that other people in the community across town from them, which is much worse than their air, that these people are having to deal with? And how do we get this to be a lot more of a kind of a regional issue?
Ooh, that's a that's the question that we're still trying to solve ourselves. You know, like, we're trying to work with frontline communities, because, like, frontline communities are the ones that have, like, that can be pretty much impacted the hardest, right? And have fewer resources to address, like, these concerns. So There's a number of pieces of legislation that we've been following. One in particular is like the Clean Diesel Act. We're pretty much trying to remove the amount of like these older vehicles that are emitting like massive amounts of diesel pollution. So it's a huge issue to tackle, but we're trying to work with our communities. There's a number of other organizations that are trying to do the same. But we don't have the biggest megaphone, especially to cast a wide net. Wide net to catch people's attention around this issue.
Well, the first Opal event that I was involved with is only a couple years ago, and it was a climate action march, mm-hmm. I think in April 2017. And it was very different from all the other climate action marches. It didn't start downtown and walk around downtown. It started in Northeast Portland and walked around North and Northeast, well, mostly I think it was Northeast Portland, and went to targeted a bunch of different places that are causing all kinds of problems. Tristan, you're nodding your head. So you want to talk a bit about that march and what the goal of that was?
I mean, I feel like part of that was just about Opal's focus, which is mostly people living on the east side of the river, and especially like even east of 82nd. And was trying to draw attention to the sort of issues that those people are facing and not just, you know, marching downtown and like getting a whole lot of positive media attention and, you know.
And also much larger crowds.
Much larger crowds.
Which is, again, yeah. We get back to that same divide that we're talking about.
Yeah, and like marching in front of City Hall and being like, look, we're in front of City Hall, therefore we're making a difference or whatever. But like actually like focusing on, you know, like real, like, you know, issues and like not just issues but also solutions. Like we're very solutions oriented organizations. Other groups will like you know, be like, this is a problem, but people already know it's a problem, but we are you know, we're like actually putting forward solutions to these problems instead of just kind of scaring people or, you know.
Well, are you working, because some of the problems are actually, I would say, legislative problems. Like we need to have laws that are going to protect us. Are you working at the legislative level in Salem as well as dealing on the community level?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like just Orlando was just saying, we have the clean diesel bill that's currently being held up because all the Republicans are in Idaho.
Yeah, that and that what another 100 really important bills that need to get passed in a week.
We really have to be looking at this at like multiple layers of intersections because and especially when it comes to like who makes these policies and who has the ability to give us what we want. You know, like there's laws that the state has to provide, right? There's laws that locally the city of Portland can do, or metro or regional government can do, or the county can do. So it's like we have to look at different avenues and how we're gonna get to how we're gonna be able to achieve victory. And that's kind of like this campaign that we launched, the Up With Riders campaign. It's kind of that way that we're looking at the different jurisdictions and their abilities to really their piece around the transportation system that we currently have. So when we look at who owns the streets and who can get our buses out of traffic, it's the city of Portland, right? When we look at who can prevent fare hikes, that's TriMet. When we look at who's designing some of our transportation system, that's mostly metro because they're like going around like they convene the different jurisdictions, especially example would be like the Southwest Corridor is one,
or
like the Southwest Corridor, mm-hmm. Which is the new MAX line that they're proposing. They also planned the Division corridor, which is in they call it BRT, but it's not quite BRT. The new bus that's going to be...
Oh, bus rapid transit.
Yeah, the new bus that's going to be replacing the number 2 line. And we had some issues with that. So really, you have to look at the different players that are within our region and how we can, pressure them into doing the right thing.
I was just thinking, a number of years ago, I had this friend who was living in Portland part-time and in New York the other part, and she had some very interesting observations about Portland. Now, this was back in the 80s, and her first observation was that people in Portland didn't have raincoats. They wore their cars as raincoats. And the other one that she noticed was that most people in Portland didn't know what bus line they lived on. Now, I think that might have changed a little bit, but do you still feel like buses are, again, for people who don't have cars, and that most people in Portland think they should have cars, and if they don't have cars, feel like they're second-class citizens?
Let's see. It's a little bit both, because if you look at the demographics of people who use transit, there are some choice riders, people who have the option to drive but choose not to. There's still a large amount of folks who depend on transit as their only means of travel. And there is still this perception, from people who don't use transit, who look at transit as you said, like a way for second class citizens to move around, or the people who are less well off to move around. And it comes up in very classist statements sometimes when. The construction of the Orange Line, Clackamas was fighting tooth and nail the expansion all the way down there because they didn't want crime to reach their communities. And it's something that we've heard as well out with the Southwest Corridor, like they don't want crime to go all the way out to, the new mall that's down.
I mean, that's one of the things that I found really disturbing, that this is an association in Portland with... association between mass transit and crime. And I can't think of any other place I've lived where there was such a strong association. And I wonder if that comes from all the years of Portland being this very car-centric place that saw mass transit as something that belongs in those big, dangerous cities like New York or San Francisco.
I think there's a lot to unpack there in why people might feel that way. But sort of what Orlando was talking about, with the Orange Line goes all the way back to the very first MAX line, the Blue Line. When it was proposed, people were like freaking out and worried about gang members coming on the trains and wreaking havoc. They started calling TriMet CrimeMet, and like there was this huge thing. And I think that perception also impacts like the presence of police on public transit. I feel like there's just like people want to see cops on transit because they have this perception that it's like this criminal, medium that's just, you know, people are getting their purses snatched and like gang members are using it to go roam around. And so, yeah, there's this like really messed up perception.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM Seattle. And today we're talking with Orlando Lopez Batista and Tristan Isaac, who are with their community organizers with Opal Environmental Justice Oregon and the Bus Riders Unite, and they're talking about their Up With Riders campaign. Just getting back to what you're just saying, Tristan, I actually remember when TriMet, when they were breaking the ground for it, which was, I think, 1982, and my band actually played at the groundbreaking ceremony back then, and it was a great festivity, and the then, Senator Mark Hatfield was there for the ribbon cutting. And it was seen as this really positive thing. And this is out in Gresham, because they broke the ground in Gresham and then worked their way back into Portland. And my memory of the light rail in particular being associated with crime was something that came much later. It came maybe 10, 15 years after the line had been running. And it just seemed to accelerate. And it's true that there have been crimes on, particularly, I think, more on the MAX line than on buses. And I also know that when I lived in New York, you know, the subways were not the safest place and people had their purses snatched. And I also know that the metro in Paris is famous for pickpockets. So this is something endemic, I think, in mass transit and on the streets all over the world. But I wonder, I mean, for one thing, I wonder if you feel like the perception of the crime on the MAX line in particular is really overblown, and what generates that illusion or delusion.
I feel like, you know, wherever cops go, they're going to find crime. So if you put more cops in a particular area, the perceived amount of crime goes up because everybody commits crime everywhere all the time. You know, it's just a matter of who gets caught doing it, right? If you put a bunch of cops in like Laurelhurst neighborhood, you probably catch as many criminals as you do in like Brentwood, Darlington, right? But, you know, it's really just like the stigma around public transit and people wanting to see cops on there and TriMet funding the transit police division so that, you know, this is like one central division that just patrols the transit system. Naturally, the like perceived amount of crime is going to rise, you know.
I do want to touch on something because, like, I think it's something that a lot of people, like, might not get across when we first talk to them about our transportation system, especially when we talk about like, a decriminalized system. We're not saying that we don't want a presence on transit. That's not what we're saying. So because we've already gotten some folks telling us, like, oh, you want to get rid of police officers? Like, well, we don't believe police officers, like... This is how we would define safety for us on transit. We actually want to go towards a different type of program that would provide safety and security on transit. So from the, like 1994 up to 2009, there was a program called the Rider Advocate Program. People who were trained in de-escalation, who provided other resources for folks, who provided help and assistance for folks who were trying to use our system. This is a system that we want to move towards, something that, and this was a small program. We want to expand it so that it can reach as many as lines as possible. It's we can't put one on every bus or every MAX because that's just, it's not financially feasible. But to like, we can have a significant group of, you know, folks who are dedicated to being on transit and providing these services at a much like lower cost than having transit police officers.
Well, one of my problems with the Portland mass transit system forever has been that there's not enough of it, and it doesn't go to all the right places, and the routes are kind of screwy, and this is kind of compared to living in a couple cities that that had really good mass transit. My understanding, though, is even the cities that used to have good mass transit, it's all kind of falling apart in the last number of years. But it seems that TriMet has some problems with understanding what would drive more ridership. And I wonder if you see some of those conflicts or contradictions between what they see to drive ridership and what would actually help. And or do they really care about how much ridership they have?
I think they do. You know, the more riders they get, the more federal funds they have access to. But they're also very stuck in like a very... like profit-driven mindset where they just feel like transit has to be this like service that people pay for. And so if they see ridership declining, they'll raise fares to like make up the difference. And then that just drives more riders away. And they like to invest in these like costly light rail projects, which, I mean, light rail is fine. There's nothing wrong with it per se, but if you put it in and it starts underperforming, you can't take it out. You know, you're stuck with it for a while, and they're building up a lot of debt related to this when just adding more bus lines would be cheaper and more effective at getting more people to ride the system.
You know, there was a vision, and I keep going back to the 80s when I think there was a much more visionary leadership at TriMet. But when they were first putting the first MAX line in that ran from downtown out to Gresham, it was going to be in conjunction with all these crosstown bus lines. So there was going to be a bus line like from Grand and MLK and on 11th and 12th and 21st and 39th and all the way out to 82nd. We should have probably gone out to 122nd. And it seemed really great. The other thing that they did at that time was, you know, this was earlier, I think in the 70s, they cut the fare. Instead of raising the fare all the time, they actually cut the fare, and it was like 45 cents to ride. You could go from Estacada to Hillsborough for 45 cents. And that seemed like just very amazing. I was also going back to New York a lot in those times. And the cost of the subway and the buses in New York was so much more than Portland. I really appreciated what Portland was doing. So there seemed to be a vision of you lower fares, you make them accessible, and you put on more lines. And also the idea that not every bus line should go through downtown to get anywhere, but you could actually have crosstown. But then there was a budget shortfall, so most of the crosstown bus lines didn't happen. Those are all the 70 number buses that mm-hmm. didn't even exist when I first came to Portland. And so they cut the bus lines, and they still had the MAX line, and it was definitely better, but it wasn't this great vision. Then a number of years ago, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago, they had another budget shortfall. So then they cut the buses some more. And in like my neighborhood, which I don't have the greatest bus service, but the main bus that I use used to come every 10 minutes. Well, now it comes every 15 or 20 minutes and a half hour on the off hours. And I discovered it was taking me twice as long to get home from downtown as I had before. That seems to me to drive away ridership when you cut service.
Oh, yeah, for
but,
sure.
But I mean, I just wonder, do you ever talk to anybody at TriMet and find out why they think the way they do?
We go to their board meetings and, you know, we have one-on-one meetings with some of their staff people. And I think there's just like this culture that's just like persisted over the years. And even sort of new people who like come on board and we feel like they might be like more visionary and radical or just kind of like very quickly fall into lockstep with everybody else. But yeah, like I honestly can't really say for certain why they feel the way they do.
Well, I'm wondering.
And I think a part of it's also like there's things that they would like to do, but they're unable to do because they don't have the jurisdiction to do it, right? And I think for a long time, like there's been this element of like cooperation between, or like non-cooperation between like the city of Portland Metro and themselves that's preventing them from like doing something bigger and more bold and more visionary. It's not until recently that like they're like, you know what, like let's actually put a transportation bond out there that would address this. And even prior to that, TriMet was actually trying to do this by themselves, right? They're like, we're gonna lead this transportation bond that's gonna pay for the Southwest Corridor. But in order for us to get it, we've got to make sure that we have to fund the I-5, I-205, and other major highway things, because that's what's really polling well. And they knew if they were to just put the Southwest Corridor on the ballot, that it would fail. But one of the things that we challenged them was like, you know, like, hold on. We will not support this if the only thing, the only transportation, like public transit improvement that you're going for is the Southwest Corridor. What we want to see is actually a robust system, like a service improvement, a robust like public transportation system, sidewalks, bike lanes, and all these other multimodal options be part of this like transportation bond. So what we're seeing now is that like Metro is kind of like finally doing their job, convening these other like stakeholders, the city of Portland, TriMet, Beaverton, Gresham, all these players are coming into the table. There's also the business community, and a number of nonprofit organizations. It's funny that we were not invited, considering that we have a long track record of advocating for public transit and among other things. But that's a story for another day. So what we're asking for through this transportation bond is like we really want to make sure that dedicated bus lanes and other bus system priority are put onto this ballot measure, or that are funded through this ballot measure. And part of the reason is because, as you mentioned, like, you know, like people are noticing that it's taking a lot longer for them to get to their destination. Like we just started conducting some surveys around congestion and its impact on transit riders. And what we're seeing is that a lot of people are saying like, you know what, like it's taking me up to like an additional 30 minutes to an hour already on top of like the normal ride at like when there's no traffic. Like it's taking me an additional 30 minutes to an hour to get to my destination. Like that's a long time that you're spending every day of the year trying to get back home or trying to get to your destination because traffic is getting people stuck, you know, on transit. Like, so if we were to have a dedicated bus lane in some of these busy corridors, buses would then be able to reach their stops on time. People would see it as an adequate alternative to driving. And then we wouldn't have to be subsidizing more parking in the city. We wouldn't have to be subsidizing like more like highway construction, like expanding freeways, because that's just a waste of money. Like this thing that people think that like, oh, why don't we just expand this because that's what we've always done. That's not sustainable. I mean, our cars are becoming more fuel efficient, so the gas tax money that used to be coming in is not meeting that demand. In addition to that, like it's becoming more costly to like rebuild our streets and roads. So like, and if you add more cars onto our streets, like we're not going to meet our climate change like climate goals. Like we're not gonna like we're allowing more emissions to go into our neighborhoods, and the people who are impacted the most are like low-income folks. folks of color who don't have the resources to address what's going on in our neighborhoods.
Well, I want to talk about this neighborhood that gets a lot of short shrift, and that's the I-5 corridor through North and Northeast Portland. And I thought that the expansion for I-5 was kind of, I hadn't heard about it for a couple of years, but it seems like it's on the table again. And I know that I get stuck in traffic whenever I'm on the freeway over by the Coliseum and whatever that area is. No more Coliseum, but that area around the Moda Center. And actually, when I'm there, I'm trying to imagine what it would be like if they added extra lanes. Is this just going to cut into the neighborhood? I mean, it's certainly not going to be at all very, it'd be very invasive for the neighborhood. But the other part that's this common wisdom is you build more lanes in a freeway, you just attract more traffic.
Absolutely.
And I've lived long enough to have witnessed that. I remember when I-205 was like my own personal freeway when I lived out in Clackamas County. And that was back in the 70s. And now it's like a parking lot, particularly around rush hour.
Yeah. And so you look at in Los Angeles, like they've built so many freeways and they're still in gridlock traffic. Like you look at Atlanta, you look at Dallas, you look at a number of cities, and it's something that, it's very hard for us to like tell folks, you know, like this is what's happening across the country. People are trying to build their way out of traffic and it's not working. And it's a lot of wasted money that's going into this, right? We have to change our way, the way we get around town. Like that's like, we cannot continue this unsustainable way of like trying to move or invest in our transportation system. Like this could literally bankrupt our state in the future.
And not to mention the air. Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And today we're talking with Orlando Lopez Bautista and Tristan Isaac about equity in transportation. They're with Opal Environmental Justice Oregon and Bus Riders United. And is it United or Unite?
Bus Riders Unite.
Unite, okay, because there was a D at one point on the website. And they have a proposal to basically radically rethink and reshape our public transit. There's an interesting line that you have that I borrowed that was in your press release about how you said that the campaign no longer accepts that transportation must be a private for-profit system that excludes and criminalizes our communities. What do you mean by private? Because I was thinking, well, TriMet is a semi-public, we pay taxes to them, a semi-public organization. I was thinking that the most private of all transportation are cars, and that is like really what we are dependent on throughout most of this country to get around. So what do you mean by private, and what would be the alternative?
I think you raise a good point about private cars, but also just sort of what I was talking about before, TriMet still has this very, because they used to be a private company, right? Back in like the 70s, they were...
Oh, actually, they when I came to Portland, they were just becoming TriMet. Yeah, it had been by Rose City Bus.
Used to be Rose City Transit or something like that. And then they got municipalized, but I feel like the culture carried over and it continues to carry over to now. And so we just feel like, I mean, it's public transportation, right? It's for the public, you know? You don't have to buy fare to go to the park or to walk on the sidewalk or to go to the library, right? Why do you have to do it to ride the bus, especially when, like you said, we already pay for it through our taxes? That's actually most of their funding comes from taxes and federal grants and things like that. And so really what we're just asking for, like, alignment in like their, you know, their like mission and like actually how they perform it. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Actually, you know, there are people who think that we should pay for parks and we should pay for schools and everything should be private. I mean, there's a mindset that actually I think we're fighting on the public sector across the board, of fighting the privatization of all this public. But I find it interesting that TriMet, which is supposedly a public institution, has a private corporate culture. And I think that that's maybe something that I'm curious to see how you would penetrate that and really try to turn that around.
One of the things that they released was like their business plan, you know, like they shouldn't be running a public transportation system as a business, you know, it's a service, you know, and we have to change the way that we look at this. We have to change how we talk about it, because like our, like it's public transportation. It's not a private transportation system. It's a public good. It's a public service for our communities. And what we're seeing right now is, like, when we have to access our system, we're essentially paying a toll. You know, like, that's what farebox revenue is. You know, like, when we're getting on a bus or on the MAX, we're paying a toll to use a public service, right? We should reimagine it into the way that we look at our roads, the way that we look at our schools, and, like, the fire department. Like, you know, this is, like, a system that should be fairless. We don't always say free, but, like, to us, because, like, nothing really is free, right? It's just that we should prioritize how our tax money is used to pay for a public good, right? So what we want to see is, like, a fairless system that would actually help our, like, talk about, like, relief congestion, not talk about, like, adding more lanes onto our freeways. That's, like, our solution. Like, you know, if we want to cut back on emissions, then we actually, like, have to reduce the amount of vehicles on our streets. And so to do that, we have to make our transit system fairless, right? If we were to make our transit system fairless, like, there's been a number of, like, studies that suggest that we might see an increase of ridership by 50%. You know, that's people who are riding their bikes, that's people who are walking, but there's also a large amount of people who will be driving, who would ditch their cars and just use our system. But we have to, like, we can't just make our current system fairless, because if we were to do that, then our system wouldn't have the capacity to carry that amount of people, right? So we have to have a huge investment in services. We need new bus lines in East Portland, new bus lines in Washington County, in Clackamas County. We need to have dedicated bus lanes so that our buses arrive on time. We need to improve safety and security, so we need rider advocates on our system so that folks feel safe using our system. These are the things that we need to make sure that people feel comfortable enough and willing enough to use our transit system and not have to worry about, like, do I have enough to pay for a fare today or for this month, right? Or do I have to look over my shoulder because, like, something's might happen to me, right? So, like, this is the what we see that will transform our transit system, that will help us achieve our climate goals, that will help us increase ridership, that will make a system that, like, could potentially lead the country in, like, you know, this is what a transportation system that we can be proud of. But in addition, it's, like, addressing a lot of issues that have historically not been addressed.
Well, I had a real TriMet epiphany the day of the Women's March, and there were two sides to that epiphany. I was waiting for the bus in Selwood to go downtown. I was with a couple neighbors. We certainly weren't going to drive down because there was no way. We knew there was going to be no parking downtown or even close in. And I generally, when I go to demonstrations that are downtown, I take the bus. So a couple buses went by, and they were totally stuffed with people because these buses had started in Milwaukee. And finally, we realized we couldn't get on the bus. I mean, we basically went back to my house, got a car, drove to Southeast Portland, parked about a mile and a half from the rally and walked. And so there were two parts that I realized. One was that if you make it congested, if you make it bad enough for parking in the core areas of the town, people will ride the bus. And that's why when I lived in New York, nobody had a car. I mean, you took public transit because you couldn't drive, and it was faster to take the subway than it was to drive anywhere. The other part of it was that TriMet was way under-resourced in terms of buses. I mean, if you're going to have everybody in Portland take the bus, which is what happened the day of the Women's March, then you need to have enough buses. And obviously, TriMet maybe had a tenth the number of buses it would take to... And the same with the MAX line. I know people in Northeast Portland who are taking the MAX, and they couldn't get on the MAX train either. So how do we... those are two really big obstacles. I mean, well, first of all is the negative incentives that get people to ride the bus. And I'm not sure if we want to go there, but we could make downtown really unfriendly towards cars, which some cities are doing, and that would get more people on the bus. But the next part of it is, how do we get enough buses and MAX trains so that we can actually get everybody who wants to take public transit actually serviced?
Well, I think one thing to know is that at least from my recollection, like the Women's March usually takes place on like a Sunday
or
a
Saturday.
Saturday, yeah. So there's actually was probably less bus service on that day, which is also an issue that, you know, we want to address.
Well, they were actually talking about putting more lines on. I mean, they knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
And they, I'm not sure they expected. I think that there were about 120,000 people at least that were there.
Yeah. But what we'd like to see is, like, you know, more service on weekends, because people are still working on the weekends. People are still getting things done on the weekends. Like, it doesn't make sense for the bus to stop running on the weekends. It's not a bank. You know what
right.
I mean? But, yeah. So I guess some of the interesting discussions we've been having at Opal have been with this. This ex-TriMet employee who's like really knowledgeable about how they schedule the buses, and it's actually interesting about the way they how you can do more with less as long as the bus is running on time, right? So if the bus, if you had a bus only lane and if you had transit signal priority, you can actually run the same frequency of buses with just fewer for the day. So you can make the resources that you currently have go further without having to invest in a huge new fleet. Right. And that's just, again, it's just something that I don't think TriMet has really considered with regards to their strategy in trying to increase service.
Well, I think they have considered it. It's just that the city has been very slow moving and playing its part in making sure that we get buses unstuck from transit from traffic.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just to recently that the city has really started investing in like making these studies to make sure or to like address like some of these concerns. So like the enhanced transit corridor plan is just like something that happened was like not even a year ago a year and a half ago. So like they started those conversations studying like what are the corridors that are keeping buses from running on time and its impact on the rest of the region. And so like this is something that like should have been done a while back, and in fact even like dedicated bus lanes should have been done a while back, because like we can't continue to expect that the city of Portland is always going to remain the size that it currently is, right? Or even 10 years ago.
Right. Well, it's very interesting. It's just as an aside, I've been noticing in the last few weeks that there's been a lot less traffic a lot of the time, and then all of a sudden I'll hit a day where, oh, it's back to that heavy traffic again. And sometimes I'm thinking, well, maybe people are getting out of their cars and taking the bus and biking, and that's why there's not much traffic. Like today when I came down to Cebu, it was like I waited for 5 minutes at a traffic light, which is an issue. But other than that, there was no traffic. So I think that whether or not we're thinking about, how much more traffic is going to be, I'm thinking about things that would make bus riding a lot more useful, actually. And one of them, I think that the buses in Portland just don't run fast frequently enough. And in a lot of cities, it used to be that buses would run every 7 or 10 minutes. And that's enough so that you can basically get there. I'm thinking about how comparing driving to busing. Buses should be able to get you to a destination almost as fast as driving. And if you factor in parking, they should be even faster. But it's not when the buses only run every 20 minutes or a half hour. So is that something that you're talking about, is like getting also the schedule frequency a little bit closer together?
That's part of the service improvement that we want to see. So like when we talk about the service improvements, it's like new bus lines, improve frequency. Making some buses like or more buses run earlier in the day or later in the evening, or even 24 hours a day, weekend service, and lines like our definition of frequent service is 15 minutes or less. Other cities have like buses that run every 5 minutes. You know, it'd be incredible if we can get bus service down to 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be happy with seven. I mean, seven right. To me is a pretty decent amount of interval.
Yeah, and we know that not all lines are going to get to that point, at least not in the near term. But there are some lines that we know that should have more frequency. So, like when we line 72 on 82nd Avenue, you see if you ever get on that bus line, you'll see that it's like one of the busiest bus lines, actually outperformed several MAX lines, you know, like only the blue line and I forgot what, the red line or no, it was the blue line. And there was two MAX lines that outperformed the line 72. But line 72 also outperforms like several other MAX lines. like this line specifically is a workhorse, you know. Back when the number 2 and the number 4 were connected, it was another bus line that outperformed other several MAX lines. And I think the 20 is another one that's also like pretty heavily used. So these lines are lines that I would say should be prioritized to improve frequency, right? There's other lines that would improve like in terms of like how much people are using it if we had a dedicated bus lane. But because they are stuck in traffic, a lot of people don't feel like it's convenient. There's a number of lines that run like 30 minutes or more, like, or it takes them like 30 minutes or more to get to, like, or in terms of frequency. That's not something that people feel like is a good alternative to for them to get to work, to go to doctor's appointments, education, or things like that.
That's like the bus line between my house and here, actually. It runs every half hour. Right. Actually, I think it theoretically runs every 15 minutes, but one bus runs on 13th and one bus runs on 17th. Mm. So the one that runs by my house is every half hour. And I've actually, on a Saturday one time, stood waiting for that bus for about an hour. And I think we figured out some other way to get there because it wasn't coming.
Yeah.
That's another thing. I've had that experience with TriMet a few times where the bus just doesn't come.
The ghost bus.
Right. Well, how are we going to pay for that?
And that's the thing that we keep hearing a lot, right? So we have to look at different revenue sources. For dedicated bus lanes, this transportation bond should be like prioritizing dedicated bus lanes. So that's one of the things that we want, right? But the other thing is like we want TriMet to become more transparent in the way they do their budgeting process, because they pretty much decide how to like they build their budget behind closed doors and then present it to the community. But by the time they present their budget, decisions have already been made and it's already like set in stone. There's very little chance, like essentially maybe 0.1% chance of you changing the budget to and make suggestions that will in any meaningful way to change the outcome. So we would like to see TriMet introduce a participatory budgeting process, right? The other thing is we want to set up ourselves in the long term to bust the highway trust fund, because those resources should not just be used for highways. It's just a waste of money.
Let's talk a bit about what the highway trust fund is.
Essentially, money that goes for like car registrations, gas tax, and other things that taxes the transportation sector. All those resources can only be used for highways and the public right of way. So that's like, we can't use that money for public transportation, which would be a much more efficient way to move people. And quite honestly, like it'd be a better investment for our communities and for our state. And now that like there's conversations about like tolling our I-205 and I-5, those resources are only going to go to the Highway Trust Fund and can't be used for other an alternative. In other cities, what you see is like when you put in tolling, there is other alternatives for people who don't want to pay the toll fee. And primarily that's public transit, but that's like a very robust transit system.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And today we're talking with Orlando Lopez-Bautista and Tristan Isaac about basically creating a people's transit system here in the Portland area. They're with Opal Environmental Justice Oregon and Bus Riders Unite. I think that another issue, and it's probably not as much of an issue for people who don't have cars, but that it would really improve our transit system here if we could change the mindset of people who are still really car dependent. And I speak as somebody who still drives way too much, and it's just too easy to do. And I think about, there's a couple of things that get me out of my car, but the first one that is there's a lot of places that just are not easy to drive anymore. And the more places that are not easy to drive, as long as there's an alternative. And that's the other part of it is we need to have a very robust mass transit system so that people will happily get out of their cars. But how do we put these two things together, changing the consciousness of drivers at the same time, changing the consciousness about what a good mass transit system is, since there's a lot of people in Portland who say that we have a great mass transit system?
Yeah.
Tristan?
I think it's just it's about like making our transit system more efficient and more frequent, because if you're you know, sitting in traffic, you're stuck in your car, you're getting heated, you know, you just want to get to work, and you look to your right and you see a bus flying by in its own private lane, and it hits the signal ahead and gets a green light and just keeps going, you're gonna be like, hey, maybe I should take the bus instead, right? So I mean, part of it is just like improving our system to the point where people just want to use it. They see it as just being the superior option. And also part of it is like sort of de-incentivizing cars by like, you know, like making like perhaps charging people to park at TriMet park and rides and using those funds to improve the system.
They do that in the Bay Area. Those park and rides cost money.
Yeah, yeah.
For BART.
And it's kind of interesting that it doesn't cost money at TriMet. Because it's like a pretty substantial revenue source.
Well, not the other part of it is, I have friends who live right near the MAX line, the Brooklyn MAX line, and they talk about all the, they call them the park and hiders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I mean, and that's the other part. It's really not very pleasant for neighborhoods. You'd think, oh, I have a MAX line stop a block from my house. This is great. It's so convenient. Yeah, but if you want to have anybody come over to your house who's driving, mm-hmm. they can't find parking spaces.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's just like, you know, like de-incentivizing cars by, you know, making parking less, you know, attractive, making it maybe cost more, and just like reducing the total amount of parking in the city, and, you know, creating like bus-only lanes. Like, we'd really like to see like the transit mall turned into like a like bus and transit-only zone, and just other, you know, important corridors, and just, you know, making it less, the whole city just like less car centric and less car focused, because this like car culture that's been going since like the 40s or 50s is just like killing people, literally.
Well, actually, when the bus mall was built, which was back in the 70s, there were no cars on 6th and 5th. That was the original design, and then they redesigned it when they put the MAX line through it, and it became more car. I mean, this car lane's in there now. It was also just a completely ugly, depressing place, the bus mall. It was any place you wanted to hang out, and just all these buses belching diesel. Mm-hmm. So I think that maybe making the bus mall more attractive to hang out, I mean, that it were maybe planting more trees. There's just things that could make it be a place where people would actually feel comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And also, you know, I mean, back then, obviously, the buses were not that great in terms of, like, efficiency and, like, cleanliness. But nowadays, like, TriMet is, like, pretty good at keeping their buses clean. I think I saw a number somewhere that was like, there's like a number going around, it's like 40% of emissions in our state come from transportation, which includes like private, like commercial vehicles and also public transportation. And the number that I saw was that like TriMet only accounts for 4% of those emissions. Gotcha. And they're the biggest diesel buyer in the state.
Yeah, they're also using a lot of frack gas. I mean, there's all these, quote, natural gas buses that they tout, the blue lettering.
Yeah.
It's clean natural gas, but of course there's some very bad side effects.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What about encouraging them also to use more renewable, truly renewable energy rather than frack gas?
Well, I mean, it's, and this perception of like, you know, electric buses is going to save us, I want to call it as a false solution, because in order to completely electrify our whole fleet, it would cost over $500 million, you know. And then that's just like the electric buses portion, you know. Like, you still have to like account for like the infrastructure that has to be made. And like,
we're talking about buses. I mean, because they used to be, the electric buses used to have like be like trolleys. I mean, they'd have a line.
And we're talking, we are talking about buses. And so this is assuming that like all our buses are, like, I mean, we also have a number of hybrid buses, you know, like, and like Tristan said, like, TriMet doesn't account for a large portion of like our emissions, you know, like 4% or so. But like, if you were to, like, the bigger impact, I would say, like, if you were to make our system completely fareless and have a robust transit system, by adding a lot more services, like what we mentioned before, that would actually have a bigger impact in reducing transportation emissions overall than just electrifying our fleet. And $500 million is a huge amount of money to invest. Now, I'm not saying that, like, we shouldn't electrify our fleet. We should down the road, right? But, like, that should be something that, you know, like, later down the road we discuss. Right now, it's like, how do we get cars out of our transit system or onto our transit system and out of, like, their personal vehicles now, like, immediately? Because that's, like, it's going to take 40 years for TriMet to electrify their whole fleet. That's as soon as they can do it, you know. It's going to take a while. It's, but, like, the more immediate way of just getting people out of their vehicles is going to be getting them on the buses if we make our transit system a very robust system that's attractive. We don't have 40 years to wait for an electric fleet that if we don't make these service improvements, then, like, I mean, we talk to folks, like, they don't care if, like, if it's an electric bus that's coming down their street. That's not what's going to incentivize them to get them onto a bus. What's going to incentivize them is if the system is running more frequently, or if, like, and also if it's cheaper or free, you know, like, or fareless. That's the thing that, like, we think that, like, electric buses is going to be this thing that's going to, like, or electric cars too, that's going to be saving us. That's, like, it's going to take a lot longer to electrify the whole system. We've seen, like, I mean, everybody's read articles that we have, like, 11 years to, like, pretty much change, like, our way that we, like, are creating emissions. You know, this is not sustainable. Like, well, if we're really like honest and like if we're really talking about like addressing climate change, then let's do the thing that's gonna have the biggest impact, the most immediate way possible.
Well, this is maybe a red herring, but I've got a caller who wants to know about how the impact would be the impact of driverless cars on the TriMet system.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm not sure I want to spend a lot of time on that, but I just it's one of those kind of scary things.
It's actually interesting because just as Orlando was talking, I just sort of had this vision of like a world of like false solutions where like there's like these electric autonomous buses that are driving themselves, but they're driving themselves through a world that is devoid of life. Like, the cities are empty, the planet is dead, but there's still this system of autonomous vehicles.
Okay.
Just driving themselves along.
I think that sums it up pretty well.
Yeah.
That's for another discussion, actually. Well, in the last few minutes, what can people do to get involved in your campaign?
Well, I do want to answer that question.
Oh, okay.
About, like, autonomous vehicles. Like, that's... and it's going to be some time before autonomous vehicles hits our streets. But one of the things that we better make sure is that they respect dedicated bus lanes. And if that happens, then you know what? Like, it's not going to have a huge impact, right? We got to make sure that they're not parking in the way of, like, our mass transit system. And if they're not, we have to get them off the streets.
If they're anything like those e-scooters, I don't want to have any part of them. Right. Well, now, just so the important thing is, how can people get involved?
So definitely check out our website, opalpdx.org. You can also find us on Facebook, just Opal Environmental Justice, or also like search for Bus Riders Unite.
And we have links to that on our website as well.
Great.
We also have our membership meeting this week.
Yeah, Thursday. And our office is off of 82nd and Powell, 3202 Southeast 82nd Avenue. Our meeting's from 6 to 8 p.m. We provide food. So if you want to learn more about Opal, feel free to join us.
And that's on Thursday, right?
Yes, Thursday from 6:30.
Well, thanks a
lot. Or 6 to 8 p.m.
Thanks a whole bunch for joining us. It's really been good talking to you, and I'd like to make more connections with Opal in the future. So thanks for reaching out to us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Today we've been talking with Orlando Lopez-Bautista and Tristan Isaac, who are community organizers with Opal Environmental Justice Oregon and Bus Riders Unite. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. If you're just tuning in and you would like to hear what you missed or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any other of our KBOO public affairs programming, just go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Next week, we'll get to hear the Puget Sound perspective on the proposed world's largest methanol refinery in Calama. We'll be listening, I'll be talking with Washington Sierra Club organizer Cecile Gernes and Claudia Riedner, who's with Redefine Tacoma. My engineer is Patsy Kohlberg. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Curtis Mayfield. Thanks for listening.
understand you by and by. Just move on up toward your destination. Though you may find from time to time complications. So keep on pushing.